Across the Park podcast is proud to be sponsored by Globe Gas and Heating. For the best kitchen and bathroom renovations, boiler servicing and repair, and central and underfloor heating in the Northwest, head over to globecentralheating.com and quote Across the Park for a free quote.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Across the Park podcast. Millsy's back in the studio with us this week and we are of course recording in the fantastic Pod Cafe. As I always say, please check them out if you're looking for any support getting on your feet as a podcast, or if you're an existing business that's looking for some additional coverage or additional media exposure, then please get on to the Pod Cafe. You can find them on Instagram and also there's a link in our bio. It's a slightly shorter episode this week because we haven't got to preview any games with the international break coming up, but we will be reviewing, of course, another fantastic victory for Sean Dyche's men on the road, and we will be taking some social media questions. We've had quite a few in, as always. But first of all, Millsy, welcome back.
Good to be back, my man, especially after an Everton win. It's what's that, 3 on the trot now? We've got a really good unbeaten record. It feels good, doesn't it?
I think we need to try and get a temporary stadium in London. I've seen some memes knocking about over the weekend. Every time Dyche passes
Wofford
Gaff, he just turns into the Terminator. Yeah. But no, brilliant win again on the road. Me and Colin were obviously previewing the game, and you previewed the game with a Palace podcast. Yeah. I did listen to the podcast and they were fairly bullish about not only their position versus us in terms of the standing of the current team, but also the game. He was fairly confident that they were going to take the points. And you know, I don't think there was anything from my point of view that I seen from Palace that I wasn't expecting, but Everton handled it quite well. And we just seem to have a way of creating chances, and we're fairly clinical on the road, aren't we?
We are. I'm going back to that podcast with D from Back of the Nest. We've had him a couple of times. He's a really nice guy. And the reason we do these podcasts is to show Evertonians, including ourselves, what other fans think of their own club that we're playing and what they think of us. And he was very much like Palace are better than Everton. Palace will have a better season than Everton. And all that could be true. Mm. And he wasn't cocky with it. I'm cocky when I go on them. You're cocky when you go on them. You protect your club. But he predicted.
I can't remember the last time I was cocky on one of them two.
Well, he predicted alongside me a bit of a close, low scoring game. So we're half right. Mm. It was a close game. I was surprised. I don't know about you, Judgy. I was surprised. I thought we'd go into it very much like West Ham away, where we're here for a 1-0, and once we get our goal, we'll protect it. We were sort of relentless in trying to get a second and a third, and we left ourselves open. So for the neutral, it was a good game for me. You watching it was a little bit like, what are we doing? The first time I've seen us really like that away from home, where it's been hell to leather.
Yeah, it was almost like the message from the manager, and that was going to be my first question. The message from the manager team for me was, let's go and beat these. Mm. You know, when you've got your left back in the penalty area, so advanced, so early in the game, that's a statement of intent, isn't it?
Yeah, and the left back, we'll come on to him. Yeah. But he got forward for the Brighton game, and he got his goal. Yeah. He got forward again in the Palace game and got his goal early doors. I don't know whether it's a managerial decision to say we're going to release you a little bit and let's see what you can do, or whether the penny's dropped with him a little bit and he's gone, actually, I can give more going forward. Because we've always looked at Vitaly Mykolenko as a defensive player. And me, I've looked at, you know, times in love heart emoji eyes, I've missed Luka Dean in what he brings going forward to Everton. Mykolenko's not really given us that. But you're right, in sending the left back up so often, or the left back naturally getting up so often, it's give us a little bit of an extra dimension, hasn't it?
I think what's interesting is, and I didn't expect this, to be honest, from Sean Dyche, I'm not suggesting he's any kind of Pep Guardiola or Mikel Arteta at this stage. He's not working with the same pedigree of player for once, but the fullbacks seem to be playing a lot narrower than they used to. You notice Mykolenko's run into the box against Palace, and also has run into the box against Brighton. He's coming inside, isn't he? He's not coming from a wide position, which, as you say, in the past we've been used to at Luka Dean and with Leighton Baines. He's getting in really narrow. You know, he's headed that ball from a centre forwards position.
Yeah.
And I mean, you look at the two wingers, and that suits them, doesn't it? They're two wingers who prefer to play wider than inside. And if you've got your fullbacks going and exploiting that gap, that could be something that.
Yeah. And we talked about Jack Harrison, didn't we, when Jack Harrison first came in for the Bournemouth game at home? And we both had the opinion that, excuse me, our shape was a lot better with a natural right winger. Dwight McNeil is a natural left winger. And I think that's a good point you're making, that there's not really room for our fullbacks to
get
overlap. Ashley Young was the one who sort of stayed back. And I was going to say, model, he was the one who defended more on Saturday. And usually, rightly or wrongly, the managers relied on the right-hand side, whether it be Patterson, Ashley Young at times this season. He's relied on that to be the outlet, and the left sticks in. But it's sort of reversed. Young did get forward once. He put a really good cross in the first half, which Lewin almost got over. But I felt like Ashley Young had a job on Saturday. And it was to defend. It wasn't to attack. And that released, the balance was good on Saturday, I think. And we seem to have found this hybrid way of working at the minute. And look, it is dangerous. I was watching at times. There was a 10-15 minute spell in the first half where we were getting cut open. Eze was having a game of his life. He had like a point to prove for some reason. And he was playing really, really well. But, you know, we weathered that storm. And there's times under Sean Dyche where we've weathered storms and got over the line. I'm thinking Arsenal home. Last season, the last 10 minutes of the last game of the season, the Bournemouth, we weathered it. It was just different for me on Saturday. It was like, we'll weather it for a period, but then we're going to go again. And I've not seen that yet, and I'm liking it.
I mean, we spoke about Michalenko then, and this brings me on to the next point, really. What's really encouraging for me to see, and I haven't seen for quite some time, I'm thinking back to the David Moyes days when, you know, you had Lescott getting on the score sheet on a regular basis. The goals are getting spread around. And I think that, for me, takes a lot of that pressure in many ways off Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And he seems to be almost thriving in that.
He's playing well without scoring goals. Now, I say that because scoring goals got him back in the team.
He came
on at Brentford, and then he scored at Aston Villa. And then again at Bournemouth. And it got him back into the team, scoring goals. That sort of dried up a little bit, but he's doing so much off the ball, so much running. And he looks a little bit like the Dominic Calvert-Lewin that broke through, you know, where he was a little bit unselfish. I remember the season under Marco Silva, where Sigurdsson loved playing with him because he was off Lewin and he could score goals, and Lewin was unselfish. And I think Ticore's got that now. I think Ticore really enjoys playing with Lewin because Lewin's been unselfish and working really hard.
And I think what I noticed the weekend, certainly Palace identified Lewin as being the threat, thinking if we can get the better of that battle, then, you know, we can kind of deal with your Decores and your midfielders. Yeah. But again, you're right. I think the unselfishness of Dominic Calvert, you know, the realisation that a lot of the time he was in more difficult positions, I think that's reaping benefits. I mean, we'll come on to the other players in a moment, but one thing I do want to pick up on is there was a player going into the game that was getting a lot of criticism. I mean, I think it was unfair, and I don't think necessarily people are criticising him for the own goal, but there's a lot of pressure, again, for Sean Dyche to maybe take Ashley Young out of the team. You mentioned he put a good cross in. I thought he had a very good game at the weekend. And again, I guess vindicated the manager's decision. And I think for me, it might not necessarily just be an Ashley Young thing. I think he just gives him, because of experience, I think Ashley Young can almost weigh up the situation and go, okay, well, I'm going to play defensive today, or I'm going to play attacking based on what the game demands. Do you think that's a big reason why he's picking him, almost for his experience and his game understanding?
I think it's almost the only reason he's picking him. I likened it to a conversation I had today in work. I likened it to when Moyes had Phil Neville.
Yeah.
And it was at times, us as fan base were like, play Coleman. But, you know, play Coleman right back. Because for whatever reason. And that's likened to Patterson now. For whatever reason, a lot of Evertonians want to see Nathan Patterson. Maybe they think that he offers more attacking. They like to see that, you know, player going forward. They like to see the player that bangs the shirt on his chest. Not so much Phil Neville. Not so much Ashley Young. And I think you're right. I think probably the only reason he is playing is for that experience, that maybe you look across at Michalenko, you look across at Jared Branthwaite. And it
game management, isn't it?
And it doesn't hurt to have an old head in there. Now, Tarkowski, what, 30? Not exactly an old head in centre-half terms. Yes, really, really good for Jared Branthwaite. Pickford, not really old in goalkeeper terms. He's played a lot of football forever and a lot of football in his career. But yeah, I think Ashley Young, I don't think he'll end the season as Everton's right back. I think when we brought him to the club, I think it was probably as a left back. and Mikhailenko's form has pushed him over to right back. I think Seamus Coleman is going to be the Everton right back at the end of the season. Mm. But Young's playing a really important role. And yes, there's times the Brighton game. I was watching you and Colin last week and I was agreeing with everything you said. You should really either helped him and put Patterson on with him, or you should have hooked him earlier, because Matoma, one of the best wingers in the Premier League, was giving him such a hard time, and he's 38. So there's times where you thought he's not the right man for this. But look, I'm a fan of Patterson. I really am. I can't argue with Ashley Young over Patterson at the moment.
And again, we say it all the time, or certainly most more professional pundits than us say it all the time, is it's a results business. And now that the manager's picking up results, there's less tendency for anyone to go, okay, well, to be critical, isn't it? You go, fair enough. You know what I mean? You're getting results. You're going, as you say, you're going and winning at a very difficult place in Palace. You're going to West Ham and winning. You're going to Brentford and winning. These aren't easy places to get points. But
let's have it right. He's playing an important role, Young. He is playing an important role. I mean, and the little things I look for, I'm an emotional person. I'm an emotional supporter. And I like that connection. I like the bang in the chest and all that. And if you watch the great YouTube video that Everton put out, the behind the scenes of the team, Young was over there at full time with the fans, and he was singing Spirit of the Blues, and he was taking selfies with the fans, and he was enjoying being part of Everton Football Club as well. That's massive for a fan like me, an emotive person who sometimes doesn't think with that. They think with that. I love all that.
Yeah, well, again, as people may have seen on Instagram, I had the pleasure of spending a bit of time with Sean Dyche on Thursday night. Yeah. It wasn't, despite what people, it wasn't a club invite or nothing like that. It was a work conference that I'd gone to, and Sean Dyche was one of the speakers. But I got a chance to have, you know, 10-15 minutes with him at the end, and he was talking a lot about the importance for him of you know, developing a team with personality and characters, and a team where even if we don't win, the fans can see and can tell that those players have put a shift in, and they're trying their best, and they're in it together. Are you starting to see that?
Yeah, and again, I liken it to, it relates more to me that when Moyes first came into the club, when David Moyes first came in, without speaking for you, we were mates at the time, so I sort of know we were thinking the same thing. We were just ready for our team to start trying more, start caring more. It felt a little bit like under Walter Smith, that do these players actually care that our fans are going away every week and spending money?
He bought a lot of players, Walter Smith, they're over the hill, hadn't he?
Exactly. Yeah, and we were a little bit like that. We're over the hill under Lampard, but I think what Lampard lost that at the end, where I was looking at that team and me and you were doing podcasts going, they don't care. And now we've got a team now who once again care. And it's important for me that you do have big characters in there. Ashley Young is a big character. I think James Tarkowski is a big character. You look at Jarrad Branthwaite. You watch him, he's developing into a big character. Again, that Everton video they put on their YouTube channel yesterday. Dominic Calvert-Lewin in the warm-up is shouting to everyone, like, let's get ready, boys, let's get ready. He's becoming a big character. And when you've got all those, when you've got a team of players on the pitch who care about what they're doing on a Saturday afternoon or a Wednesday evening, sometimes that's worth more than skill and talent. How many times have we seen talented players who don't care? Yeah. Royston Drenthe, Andy van der Meijden, on paper would be fantastic players. At times, James Rodriguez didn't turn up. You think, if you give us 50% today, we're worth your weight in gold. What we've got now is we've got 11, 12, 13 players who I think care about what they're doing in an Everton shirt, and that's massive.
Yeah, me and Colin touched on it last week, but I think it's important to almost re-emphasise it again. You've got to give some credit here to Kevin Thelwell, you know. And I'm not just, I mean, most of the signings he's made have not been signings that, and you're the worst for this, really fickle, you know, getting fans out the seats, going, course, yeah, let's go down a souvenir shop and let's get that shirt on the back. The kind of underwhelming signings, some of them, but it's as though, you know, he sat there almost with a recipe book, hasn't he, and going, well, we need that ingredient, we're lacking this, we're lacking that, with a very limited budget.
Yeah.
And he's managed to just assemble something, certainly, that me and you were calling out for at the start of the season. That's a team that can just get us in a safe position, you know, that can beat the teams that we should be beating, that know what they're about, and the, you know, get the fans again just enjoying going the game and knowing that the you know, their team have put a shift in.
Yeah, I think it's right to point to Kevin Thelwell, because I've given him stick this time last year on the podcast. I've said, where's the voice? I know we've got a question from a viewer on Twitter who wants to talk about Kevin Thelwell's interview. I was saying, where's the voice? Not only where's the voice, like, I can't really see an identity.
The plan?
What is the plan? Is we're signing a Idrissa Gana guy and Amadou Onana in the same window. Is that a plan, or are we stumbling across that?
Saturday has been sitting there with a grin on his face when you make that change at half-time.
Okay, you can't get Che Adams, so you bring in Neil Maupay, and I'm criticising that. I think this summer, I think to bring in a striker in Beto, who on paper is going to be ready for the Premier League at some point this season. Youssef Chimiti, who long-term you think in 2 or 3 years' time.
But again, just briefly on Chimiti, because he's obviously not been in the limelight. He's been, if you almost to a certain extent, rotten in the under-21s or under-23s at the moment. He doesn't seem to be sulking about it. You know, you've seen him off the bench, sprinting down to go and celebrate with Guy when that goal goes in.
And that's Monday to Friday at Finch Farm. Mm. I think that's away from Thirlwell. I think Thirlwell will provide these players, and it's down to the amazing staff at Finch Farm that we know. Great lads there, and they make these players feel at home. But you look at, if you then go back to the Onana signing last year, that's a long-term signing. The James Garner signing was not for August last year.
Brilliant.
He's for August this year and August next year. Yeah. Amadou Onana is for August this year, and then probably, arguably, a profit for the football club the year later.
As we spoke about as well, the decision to let Jared Brantwaite go on loan for the whole of last season, to bring him back, to slowly... Yeah. And as you say, bedding him in is the job of the first team staff on the ground. But
yeah, and that's not a Lampard or a Dyche call. That's a Thelwell call, the loan deal for young players. Like, I don't know the ins and outs. You probably know more of it because you work in the pyramid. But I don't think that's really a managerial choice when the manager's got a director of football. I think the voice is heard, but I think the director of football says, I think PSV are the option for Jared Brantwaite.
Well,
I thought Blackburn were the year before. It's on me.
I think generally the way the conversation goes is, look, is he going to be used to this season? Maybe not. He's probably not going to be used. Okay, well, let me do something with him. Let me decide what we do. And again, the relationships that you develop with clubs are important as well. You'll probably see at somewhere in the near future, probably some deal being done with PSV where we take players off them.
Yeah, because Brands is there, isn't he?
Exactly.
So yeah, there's a telephone call waiting to happen at any day of the week, really, isn't there?
But yeah, I just thought, again, it was worth pointing that out. And we just touched on the substitution that was made at half-time, and substitution that certainly most Evertonians would have been a little bit disappointed to see.
Hmm.
You know, whatever the circumstances, you look and go, you know, when Arna's gone off, Garner guy's coming. We all know what Garner guy's about. I think it's only ever a question of his willingness to get stuck in and put a shift in, but he often lacks that guile, that creativity. He's often guilty of maybe trying to do things he's not capable of. That goal, the winner, is probably something that you wouldn't think he was capable of. But, you know, what a bit of play. And again, you talk about Decore, the confidence he's playing with. But when you see Garner guy making runs like that into the area, I think it shows, again, as a collective, the team are all pulling in the same direction, aren't they? And they've got that understanding that comes from playing together so often.
Yeah, look, Garner guy is probably playing the role now that he should be playing. He should be the backup for Amadou Onana. If Onana, for whatever reason, is carrying a knock in game, or is not performing to the best of his ability against his man, I don't know which one it was on Saturday.
It doesn't seem to...
I don't know which one it was. But in either of those circumstances, you bring a Idrissa Gana guy in, and he plays 45 or 30 minutes for Everton on a Saturday afternoon. And that's what we've got now. And I think the criticism of, you know, the manager or the player was at times, he's not what we need. He is declining as a player. He can't play 90 anymore. So but what I think, we're doing now is he's coming on and he's making an impact. He's making such an impact. He's scoring a winning goal for Everton.
But I think for me, with Garner guy, you know what you're going to get. And I think the manager likes that. I think there's games that he's going to start. I think we've had this opinion for a while, haven't we? There's games that, you know, Garner guy, I think it's a good game for him to start.
Yeah.
There's games that you think, well, no, we'd rather see an Aaron in there. But equally, if there's a change to be made or a certain circumstance, you know exactly where Garner guy can fit in. And I think it was the latter. I mean, it hasn't been confirmed, so I didn't want to kind of put my neck on the line, but you've kind of vindicated that it is a little bit of a grey area. However, I think it was the latter. I think that the penalty that I think Onana almost gave away, where him and Brantwaite as a nibbler.
The second one,
I think that was a penalty, by the way, and we can touch on that in a moment. But I think that's one of the reasons. I think he was often caught the wrong side of the ball. I think he was getting a little bit, you know, he was daydreaming a little bit.
Mm.
But again, I think that's, as you say, I think that's a really good fit for guys to go, okay, well, look, it's not a game for Onana, or it's not really working out for Onana. Yeah. Go in and do that. He's an intelligent footballer, and he's done play for the likes of PSG without being an intelligent footballer and knowing where you fit in. He clearly, I think he's the type of person who's watching the game carefully and knows exactly what he needs to do when he goes on, regardless of what the manager says.
But every good side or every side with any sort of plan going into the Premier League this season will have those players.
Yeah.
If A's not working, B comes in. It's, if you put it like that in that context, it's simple.
Yeah.
But we failed at that for years. We've had such a disjointed team. Even when Carlo was here, look at some of those players. How does James Rodriguez play with Mason Holgate? You know, you look at when we had Samuel Eto'o. How does he play with Tony Hibbert? God love Tony Hibbert. Yeah. We've always been a little bit disjointed. Mm. And I think this squad now, look, there's times where that manager will look at his bench and he probably says, I don't trust a Lewis Dobbin, or I don't trust anymore a Michael Keane, or I don't trust a Chimiti.
Mm.
But I'll trust a Justin Ogana guy, I'll trust Beto, and that can impact the game for us. And that's a really strong position we're in now.
Yeah, definitely. I think what was pleasing to me, for me as well, was Jack Harrison getting an assist as well. Really good ball early in the game. I think he's a player, you know, he's clearly been putting a shift in. I'm not sure we've really seen the best of him so far, but statistics like that are important to wingers. You know, and I think what's encouraging to me, going back to the thing of sharing the goals, we've still got Harrison who's not chipping in. We've still got McNeil who's not really chipping in.
Mm.
That gives me a lot of optimism. Like, if you can start getting those wingers shipping in goals and assist as well, I think again it gives you more reason to think that you know, the 14th isn't the limit of our capabilities this year.
Yeah, I think with Harrison in the side, I think we're better. What I do worry about is there's times on Saturday in the second half he looked knackered again.
Oh yeah, he's
and you're thinking there's no real.
He's been out for a long time.
So talking about the options there with Beto and talking about just a Garner guy. But one thing we don't really have is the ability to change our right or left side.
Mm.
You can put Dan Juma on, but is he going to track his man?
You know, you're getting a lazy forward, aren't you?
Exactly.
Really?
Is he going to track his man when Everton are 3-2 up? I don't think so.
You've seen that. I think it's been rare that he's brought Dan Juma off the bench in away games. He's done it frequently. He's done it at home, and if he's doing it in away games, he'll do it for the forward instead. Yeah. But he's in a bit of a queue, obviously, to get past the other.
Harrison's numbers are all right. I was looking at the design, and on the iPad, Harrison for me sometimes. I'm a bit like, you know, he's drifted out of the game. And this is why I'm not a professional football manager, because I don't see what other people see. But the manager sticks with him and he does track his man. He's important for balance. His numbers are good. I think he's got 3 assists and 1 goal since he's came in. And that's all you can ask for, really, in our position, to bring Jack Harrison in on loan and get that output. I think he's been quite important to us, I really do.
No, I agree. And I guess just to play devil's advocate slightly, there's been a lot of positive comments. You said it before, of having a 12, 13 players that are really strong. You know, the impending suspension of Branthwaite and Tarkowski, which is going to happen. No, Branthwaite's on 4, but Tarkowski's on 3. Does he get one on?
No,
he's still on 3. He's still on 4 and 3.
Both, really. But
exactly. There's a chance that certainly one of them will be suspended, or, you know, hopefully it's one and then the other rather than both at the same time. But there's still that worry, isn't there? You know, if you have 3 or 4 injuries in that team, and look, what can you do? It's not a conversation in depth for now, but it's still a concern, isn't it? The lack of depth outside, particularly for me, outside of Guy. And if Guy isn't available on Saturday, who's coming in and playing in midfield there?
Yeah, and look, Sean Dyche came in, didn't he, and done the bleep test.
Yeah,
and he wanted to gauge the fitness of a squad, because probably the job memo was to him, very, very little money. You know, not really a chance for us to give you the 15, 16, 17 players that you trust, because you probably don't like 8 of them who you're already. You want to get shut to them, then we can't replace it. That goes into the window. I think one of our first podcasts this season, I think me and you said we let an awful lot of players there go and didn't really replace the squad. Sheffield United was the first away game after the window shut, didn't fill our bench. And the manager was on TNT Sports saying, you know, we'll get better when players are back, but this is a small squad. So I think if Branthwaite or Tarkowski do get suspended, if Dominic Calvert-Lewin, which is likely, unfortunately, does get injured again, if, again, likely Abdoulaye Doucouré gets a knock or he's suspended, we've already seen Onana, we've coped with that. What if Garner's not ready as well?
Yeah.
Or what if James Garner's not ready at the same time? Amadou Onana isn't ready. So yeah, there's 12 or 13 players there that we trust. Beyond that, I think if we got a 3-game ban for a red card or we got a hamstring to an important player, I think things can change very, very quickly, can't they? So maybe January, maybe do a podcast in January. We can do a more in-depth podcast on that and say, look, we'll put our team on the board and get listening involved and say, where should we strengthen? What would you like? But getting to January from now is big. There's a lot of games, yeah. isn't there? And including a cup quarter final.
Yeah, definitely. Well, just on that one, there was, as I say, that I had a conversation with Sean Dyche last Thursday, and there's a few things that he said. He was obviously quite coy in what he was willing to talk about, and he knew the fact that I do a podcast because I was introduced as...
Yeah.
This is his job, but also he does this, just to let you know before he starts spilling the beans and everything. A couple of things he did say was that there's certain players in the squad that, you know, whether the fans want them to be involved, want them to play, are just nowhere near ready. And he just said, look, I just wish the fans would trust me. If I don't include someone, there's good reason for it. If you're not seeing them on the pitch on a regular basis, there's good reason for it. Andre Gomez must be one of those players.
I think there's a touch of the... you don't really know what's going on with Andre Gomez. I think every press conference, the manager does an update on a Thursday at Finch Farm or a Friday at Finch Farm, and he's on the injured list.
Mm.
I've never known Andre Gomez to be injured like this, apart from the time he nearly lost his ankle.
Not when you're told exactly what it is or what's wrong.
Yeah, I think reading between the lines, there's a little bit of the Damari Gray's about Gomez, isn't there?
Yeah.
Where the manager in the summer was saying, Gray's not ready. Mm. And then Gray came out and said, I am ready. And then Dyche had to counter it. Mm. I think you might get a little bit of that in January if Gomez goes. When you told me that story last week that you met the manager and spoke about him, you told me that. Two names that sprung to my mind straight away, you might agree or not, I thought Beto and Patterson. Mm. I thought they're the players that maybe the fans want, and I can't yet play them.
I think Betterson's quite... Betterson? Betterson? He's amazing. Beto and Patterson, one player. I don't think Beto's the player. I think it's quite obvious. Beto's been kept out of the team by a fit and firing Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I don't think that was reading in between lines who was getting it. Patterson was definitely one of them, without doubt. He did speak fairly at length about the Jared Branthwaite situation at the start of the season. He said, look, everyone knows that I know Michael Keane, I've managed Michael Keane, but Michael Keane wasn't the reason Jared Branthwaite wasn't playing. Jared Branthwaite was the reason that Jared Branthwaite wasn't ready.
He was late
ready.
Back, wasn't he, in pre-season and stuff?
Yeah, he said, he said, and again, it was quite an amusing comment, he said, some of our forwards in training were running rings around them, and we didn't even have any forwards at that stage. So he was just talking about the fact that, look, he prefers players to play who he knows what he's going to get out of them.
Mm.
And he said, whether that's old school or what, he said, and he said, look, related to your job, he said, if you're in the office or you're in an environment and you're working with five or six colleagues, you trust inside and out, you're the manager, you trust them, you know exactly what you get out of them. One of them looks like he's lagging a little bit. Would you send him home and bring an apprentice in just because he looks a bit tired? Or just try and keep him until you've got the most out of him.
Mm.
I think he was kind of trying to get me to send a mess out to say, look, sometimes he's making subs because he's looking behind him going, if I bring that person off the bench, regardless of how tired that other person is, it's probably going to have a bigger impact or a more negative impact on the team than it is by keeping the tired person on there. So I kind of, as a little bit of sympathy for that. Can't say I completely agree with every situation where that might happen, but I think he was indirectly saying that there's a tighter group of those players probably that he trusts rather than maybe every man out there.
And you spoke to Sean Dyche before the game at Palace after the Brighton game.
Mm.
And that's the Patterson shout, isn't it,
yeah.
for Young?
Yeah.
And that's summarised in what he was speaking to you about.
Yeah, and probably even Harrison. He probably even knows, we were saying, look, could have took Harrison off. I didn't ask, it was a work too. I wasn't going to start digging out the manager or trying to get into specifics with him, but it definitely was that. One person he did mention probably five or six times in different contexts was James Garner. Kept on saying Jimmy that. Absolutely loves him by the sounds of it. I think he's almost become his, he's the guy he has at Burnley, used to play centre mid. He's still the captain
there.
Jack
Cork or something, is it? All?
Yeah, no, the other one.
There's another.
I think it's Burnley's captain now. But anyway, he couldn't speak highly enough. He said, what a player. He says anything you ask him to do, he can do it. Different positions he can play in, different instructions. Such a clever player, so tenacious. You know, he really rates him highly. And I think, you know, for him as a manager, I think a lot of managers say this, they like to have their, you know, almost a little mini-me on the pitch. And I know Sean Dyche wasn't the centre mid, but I think he's someone probably embodies a lot of the things that Sean Dyche wants. And we spoke about at the start of the season, we looked like we were lacking someone to dictate the play or to, you know, to get the foot on the ball and control the game. He's been that person for us, hasn't he?
He wants the ball. And I can see why the manager likes him, because he's a hard worker. He played right midfield. He's played right back. He's played the six, he's played the eight. I imagine in game he's played the 10 without me really realizing it. And again, I'm always someone to look back and compare. He reminds me a little bit of when Moyes has Osman. Always put out, it'd be left centre, it'd be right, but he'd want Osman on the pitch because Osman would be someone who would, do you know what, I'll get the ball.
He'd use the ball.
Give me the ball, I'll take it. It's not a hot potato to me. I might lose it, but I'll have the ball. And I think this Everton team needs James Garner in it because you haven't got a lot of that. Abdoulaye Doucouré, for all his strengths, is not someone who will get on the ball and make things happen. Amadou Onana, better than Doucouré at that. Mm. But again, you want Onana in duels. You want Onana winning the ball for you. The Everton team needs James Garner. And I think he's standing out so much because of that. I think we haven't got a lot of those players. If you had four or five of those players, excuse me, and we were a footballing side, then he'd get lost in the shuffle. But he's one of few. Give me the ball.
The last thing he did touch on, or I kind of asked him to touch on, I can't remember actually whether he brought it up himself, but he did mention the cup. And you know, it was like, look, I know. He said, look, the job this season was to steady the ship and to, you know, bring, you know, personalities, characters, such, get some stability in. But he did say, look, he said, I'm very aware of how long and how long the wait's been for the cup. And he said, I'm not, you know, it's still a tough route through to the final, even though it's opened up a little bit. But make no mistake about it, that, you know, is a priority for us to try and get as close as we can.
I'd love to hear that. Cup.
And it was great for me to hear. Yeah, great for me to hear it. And, he wasn't kind of being bullish about saying we're going to win that or whatever. Or as I think he must have stressed a few times that, you know, there's still some very, very good sides and sides really who would be expecting to beat Everton. But I almost got the feeling that, you know, this away form is almost giving that team a little bit more belief that we can go and upset the odds. You know, we've got a bit of a blueprint of playing now. I think they'll feel a little bit hard done by, I'm sure. The defeat at Anfield, they'll feel that's almost, at the moment, it just looks like a little bit of a blotch, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Compared to the other games around it. So, yeah, again, it was an encouraging conversation. To stress, it wasn't a podcast, it wasn't an exclusive.
Can't release it.
It wasn't exclusive, but it wasn't it was just a chat that I had with him that I ended up roping him in for it. But what I will say, just on a personal level, utterly charming guy and really nice fella, dead down to earth, really easy to speak to. You can see why this group of players have bought into, you know, his way of playing. Obviously, results is a big factor, but you can see that I think you can see the players want to play for him. You know, they're enjoying the way in which he set them up, and I think it helps once you start scoring goals, doesn't it?
Yeah, I imagine the players trust them. Yeah. And that's not something that the players had with previous managers. The same core are the same, aren't they, really? And I get a lot of that there's a togetherness at Finch Farm. Now, without being there and without talking to people who are there, which we wouldn't do, we don't want to break confidence of people, but from my point of view, looking from the outside, it feels different. I think the last time it felt there's 11 blue shirts out there who are going to give their all was probably Moyes. There was patches under Martinez where there was a great team. Carlo let the shackles off in COVID, and that was a great team. Marco Silva had a spell where you could see something, and then it
great
just
team, it wasn't a great team. You know what I will say about the two people in particular that you just mentioned in terms of Carlo and David Moyes? I think the things they were doing was simple. And Carlo's a great manager. Make no mistakes about it. David Moyes is a very good manager. Don't you can call him great. He's not Carlo Ancelotti level. But what you did, what I think I found from watching Carlo Ancelotti's team, there was nothing, no airs and graces about them. It was simple things he'd done. You know, defending really deep in those free kicks. You're like, what's he doing here? But, you know, it wasn't outlandish. It was simple concept of, you know, I have good players who can head the ball and I want to give them the best chance.
Yeah.
I think they'll win the ball invariably. I don't want to get caught out by, you know, a high line or whatever.
Yeah. And it's similar to Dice because, not to compare Dice directly to Carlo Ancelotti because we'll get a lot of hate on the comments for that. But I think both men in their own right have came in and gone, that's what I view the limitations of the squad to be, and this is what I think they can do. So Dice just came in, and for whatever reason, he said, look, I prefer to surrender the ball at times because I believe that we can defend well, and I believe we can hurt teams if I set the set pieces up right, and if I get my centre-forwards where I want them to be with Doucouré, we can hurt teams as and when. I think Carlo came in, saw Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and said, I'll put three players around him, and he's caused the goals, and that's how we win games. Carlo messed up at the end because he bottled it, didn't he? He started losing games, and he was like, I don't know how to set them up anymore.
Yeah.
And then the team showed the fragilities. So let's hope it doesn't get there with Dice. But yeah, look, I do feel, without repeating myself, that there's a number of Everton players out there who care.
Yeah,
and how long have we asked for that for?
No, exactly. I think the one thing I'll end with on my side of it is just, and again, we stressed this on the last show, and maybe the one before, is, you know, we're doing very well on the road at the moment, and there's a buzz about it, the players when they go away from home. Yeah. Let's just make sure in the next home game that we're giving the players the backing that they're getting on the road.
Sunday afternoon.
Have some patience.
United at home, under the lights, the old lady.
Absolutely, can't wait for that. But we're just going to touch on go through some socials, Millsy. A few of these things we've already touched on in quite a bit of detail, but we can go back to them anyway. So Julie, these are all off Twitter, I believe. Julie says, I feel like this season's finally getting the reset that's been required for a long time. I've seen much more talented squads, care a lot less, you said that before, and work a lot less hard. Same thing, really. But the foundations have to come first, and I think this year is showing just that.
It probably is. You want a marble floor. You can't just put it on sand, can you? You've got to start somewhere.
I hate to see you doing that.
I can't start with floor. You know what I mean? It's a little bit like, I came out of the Brighton game with my little boy, and I was a little bit like, oh, devastated, not only by the results, but by the football. And then once you get home and you realise, like, that's just where we are, and that just got us a point. And I'm not sitting in the finished product here. I'm watching something start. And I think, I forget the name.
Julie,
I think it's a really good point that she said foundations. And I think we're going to have to sit here sometimes this season, meet up here in the pod cafe and talk about that was a bad result, that was a bad weekend. But it's foundations. Yeah. I mean, this is the reset, isn't it, really?
Yeah, definitely. Ben goes on to say, stability, a gap between the bottom three and ourselves, players trying their best. Would I want us to play better football eventually? Yes, but let's be realistic. This isn't going to happen this year or maybe even next.
Would you agree with that?
About the last bit?
There's not going to be a lot of great football, but this is still a good season, kind of thing.
Do you know what? I'm enjoying the football. Like, I'm not saying I don't buy into old tiki-taka, and I wouldn't love to see us dominate the ball, but like yourself, I hated the Marco Silva, Martinez ways when it wasn't going well, when it was just pass. And when you're a team that maybe is in a bad spell under managers like that, you can be the easiest team to play against, because they're gonna give the ball away because they're not feel confident, but the manager wants them to pass it. So let's just win the ball off them high up the pitch. And we took some real batterings at times because of that. So I think what I would say about this manager, and I'm not saying he's going to be the manager forever, but I think what you can confidently say is he's going to make sure that we compete in most games, with the exception of maybe one or two a year when we can't do anything about it. And he's going into a knife fight with a spoon. But I think... Yeah, I don't think the footy's bad at all. I don't think we have as much of the ball as people would like, but we're not scoring. Like, we're not hitting the ball 70 yards and it's getting flicked on. And I mean, that was proper, you know, those days back in the 90s or whatever, maybe under Smith, and at times under Moyes, when we were hitting diagonals so our wingers to go and get in the end and win second balls, it's not that bad. We are playing through the thirds. I mean, that Ganagai goal was as good a goal as you like to see. The Michalenko goal was a very good goal as well.
I think without again speaking for, well, I forget, sorry, Ben, without speaking for Ben, or speaking for any Evertonians who aren't happy with the style of football, I'll include myself in that. I think what's fresh in the mind is probably the Arsenal home and Brighton at home where we were. We don't want the ball. Some fans think at home you don't do that. You go, you give them a game. If you lose 3-0, you give them a game. And this manager's not like that.
I'll go back to something he said again on Thursday. He said, look, my job is to win football matches or to get a result for the team. You know, sometimes it'll be ugly. Sometimes it might be good. He said, but I think of every game in isolation and I try and get a result from one week to the next. So I think what it is fair to say, look, he's a percentage man. He plays percentages more than the other managers we spoke about, more than some managers in the Premier League. He'll want the players to not take as many risks on the ball. He'll want the players to get the ball into the final third and do their creative work in there. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But I think Ben's spot on. We're not going to be seeing sexy football, should we call it, in the next 6 months to a year. But you need a certain type of players to produce that, and we haven't got that group of players right now. So
yeah, that's fair. No,
it's a fair point anyway. Aaron, quick one. Where are you going to sit at Branley Moor? We're hoping for the similar, you know, to be in the one of the ends, aren't we?
We got invited by the club, didn't we? We couldn't go last week just to have a look at some virtual reality stuff. It was a nightmare. Judy was at his event, and I was in work myself. It would have been nice to go and have a look, wouldn't it, of what it looks like. What I understand from, I looked at some of Ped's tweet from Toffee TV, and he said it looked really, really good. I'd like to see first. I wouldn't just like a letter through the post. Where do you want to sit? This is available CCDDEE. I'd like to go and be able, even if it's a VR, a virtual
say,
reality.
Given the way that they've done the consultation, you know, with those things around town, we could go and actually look at.
Exactly.
I'm hoping that they can do something like that. Even exactly. Even if it is from your own laptop and stuff, where it goes like, put that seat and you can actually see what it looks like from there.
Yeah, exactly. And the fans forum had a meeting with the club at the end of October, and they put their minutes on Twitter, and the club have apparently said to the fans forum that we're not going to offer season holders like for like because it doesn't really exist. Because if you sit back row lower bullens now, we can't say the front row of the new stand is going to be.
That's interesting though, isn't it? You'd be gutted. I mean, from a
we're in the park ends, we're probably more likely to get a like for like, but everyone else.
I was going to say, but from a personal point of view, and you sat in my seat, I probably got the best seat in the park ends without sitting in the nice seats. Do you know what I mean? Turned like I'm right above the crossbar, right in the middle. I'd be devastated if I get put in the top left-hand corner or top right-hand corner or at the very back row.
A little to answer the question, a little bit behind, like you all know that me and Judgy have got kids. I think it probably depends where our kids want to sit because our kids have been on the waiting list now, and I know we're both looking at Bramley Moor as a chance to get our kids into the stadium. I mean the club. I had a right row with the club last year because one of our mates, Pricey, used to be on the podcast. He was on the waiting list for 2 years and got a season ticket, and my little boy Noah. He was on the waiting list before he was born, kind of thing. And I rang the club and said, like, what's going on? I know for a fact you're giving season tickets out to people who are on the waiting list for less time. And
they've lost the list.
the club said, we've got a responsibility to that 3, 4, 5-year-old. You've got to sit with them. We've got to find 2 seats. You're never getting them. You're never getting 2 seats. You'll get one who gives up.
No, it's a good point.
You'll never get two. So we're viewing it as like maybe our little boys or girls can start going to games. So depends where they want to sit.
Just change Noah's date of birth.
I know. Put him on his own in the bullens.
Yeah. Okay. So to be continued. That question anyway. But thanks for that one, Aaron. Jake, it was good to hear from Kevin Thirlwell. We touched on this last week. What did you think of his comments? We've kind of.
It's just nice to hear from him, I think. And I was on our podcast last year saying, like, just speak to us. I mean, you know, Julia Bowles, who's a really good journalist and she's a friend of the show, she's done that amazing BBC series where you heard Kevin Thirlwell
really good
talking. And I was one of those fans who...
From BBC Sounds, that, by the way, if anyone wants to catch you.
I think everyone's heard it by now. It was brilliant. And I was one of those fans who were like, he's being interviewed in real time in January there by the BBC and I'm hearing about it. In October, why couldn't I hear about it in January? And now we're hearing in real time. Now he's put, albeit it wasn't audio, it was transcribed onto the official website. But some of it's really good, and he's talking about my job is medium to long term with an eye on the short and the short safe, and even stuff like that. I'm going, okay, well I know someone's got a plan.
Yeah. Well, you touched on it before. The Garner Guy signings are now, aren't they?
Yeah.
You need every now and again. The Ashley Young signing is now.
Yeah.
The manager needs some experience, wants some cover.
Yeah.
And I think that's as you say, it's encouraging to hear anyway that type of foresight at least is going on.
Yeah.
Last one, I should have probably tied this up with another one, but this is from Chris. Taitas is doing the basics a lot better. Results have naturally improved, but I don't think it's a bad thing for wanting a better style of football. So he's effectively saying, look, he's giving a nod to Dyche to us doing the basics. I'm assuming he's talking about set pieces, generally defending. The results have naturally improved. But he says the fans have almost got a right to want better football.
Yeah, that's always going to be there, isn't it? And I think there'll be a time. If Sean Dyche, touch wood, for the next year, 2 years, shows the little improvements where if Everton finish 13th and then 11th, there will come a time where me and you naturally will go, well, we're now safe. Can you push us on? Moyes done it in a short period, didn't he? Moyes finished 7th in his first season and then finished 4th in his third or fourth season.
Imagine.
And then after that, it was constantly qualifying or trying to qualify for Europe. And we'll get to a point with Dyche. If Dyche smashes this job,
just briefly on that one, the results improved, the positions improved. I don't honestly think, apart from maybe the odd game where, you know, Arteta and that turned it on and Pina. I don't think the football ever really improved. Got gradually better, but it wasn't like, it was never, we were never, we had the odd game where we beat a team 5-0 or whatever, but then I wouldn't say that it was, we've had that though at Brighton under Dyche, and it was never, it was very rarely us controlling a game from start to finish, scoring early, scoring three, you know what I mean?
Well, Martinez came in, didn't he, and he used almost what Moyes had and then made it a bit more attacking because Moyes,
and you could see the difference, couldn't you? Oh, wow, we're actually dominating games.
All of a sudden, Kevin Morales was told not to track back. All of a sudden, like you brought other players in who were attack-minded. But I do think there will be a time. And again, going back to what I've just said, if Dyche does keep doing what he's doing, which is making effective, no bones about
effective.
It, improving the team and improving our standings in the league, someone's going to go. Can you find the next Kanchelskis? Can you find a Tim Cahill?
I'm just, and again, this is not coming out of bias because I only met him last week and he was a nice guy. I just think, let's just keep remembering where we were at the end of last season, how bad it was. Do you know what I mean? Just keep that bit of context in your mind. Absolutely fine with us, you know, wanting players to be a little bit more ambitious, particularly in games when we're in front or against teams that you should be dominating. That's absolutely fine and natural.
It's a conversation for the future, that, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I think that we've obviously going into an international break. And the important thing to say at this stage is this will be our only show this week. There won't be, obviously, an opposition preview. We certainly won't be previewing the England game, that's for sure. So this is your only dose of Across the Park this week. Enjoy the rest. I mean, I said to Colin last week, I think I said to Mills the week before, I'll be looking forward almost to that two-week break. I think it's a great time to have the break. Coming off the back of a few very good victories, still in the cup, very much looking forward to that. And we'll keep previewing that game until it comes up. Because, you know, whether it's wrong to be or not, I'm excited about it. I'm looking forward to a potential trip to Wembley. I'm looking forward to a two-legged semi-final.
Poor fail in the semis.
Yeah, oh, please. I mean, oh God, Ian Bowie, I can still see that deflected goal now. But I am looking forward to a potential two-legged semi-final if we can get past Fulham. But yeah, that's about all from us across the park. Massive thanks as always to our long-standing sponsors, Globe Heating and Gas. Walked into the studio today. It was freezing outside. Thankfully, it's warmer in here. But if you're having any problems with your boiler or you're looking to try and ramp up or improve your bathroom, then please give the guys a shout. Thanks again, as always, to the Pod Cafe, and we'll catch you all soon. Up the toffees.